This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But from where I sit, I think the opposition are not being very fair because the government has only been in power for a few months, not even a year yet.
That's Dr. Edgar Gistua, an international relations, security and diplomacy expert at the United States International University in Nairobi, on the violent opposition protests going on in Kenya. Details coming up. Also, an explosion ripped open Johannesburg's busiest street, and at least 9 people have been killed and 16 injured when an explosive device accidentally detonated in the DRC. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Kenya is in the midst of an anti-government protests led by the opposition political party over a contentious new finance bill and the rising cost of living. Dr. Edgar Gistua is an international relations, security and diplomacy expert at the United States International University in Nairobi. He tells me the opposition should have looked for better ways other than protests, which have turned very ugly. Dialogue should have been the preferred route. These protests, according to Dr. Edgar, are nothing more than economic sabotage that will eventually hurt the country. He has now come to the conclusion that opposition leader Raila Odinga is a sore loser.
Okay, so the opposition has decided to stage protests. But from where I sit, I think the opposition are not being very fair because the government has only been in power for a few months, not even a year yet. And so they were trying, the president came in and he tried to bring in, to remove subsidies because Kenya was living in a very artificial economy with a lot of subsidies, subsidies in food, subsidies in fuel. So he removed the subsidies so that the economy could just, the market forces could balance out and Kenyans could understand the true cost of living, the actual cost of living. The subsidies were costing the government a lot of money. So when he withdrew the subsidies, that is when now people started feeling this rising cost of living. But let me also say that even if it is the opposition that had been in power, the high cost of living would have still been experienced because the world is in a global recession. Economies are in a lot of recession in many parts of the world. The Russia-Ukraine war affecting the price of fuel and all this. So Kenya is really not unique. So my take is that, number one, the opposition should have looked for better ways other than protesting and the violent demonstrations that you people are seeing in the media. They should have chosen the dialogue route, and they had already formed a committee to start dialoguing and stating exactly what they felt should be done. But somehow the talks collapsed, and that's why we are where we are.
So you're saying it's too early. The government has not been given a chance to kind of advance its policies. It needs more time. That is basically what you're saying.
Exactly. Because, for example, if I'm to be specific, like in the food sector, in the food security sector, what they did, the government brought in a lot of subsidized fertilizer so that farmers could access fertilizer cheaply, so that the cost of inputs for agricultural produce could be cheaper, so that eventually when the maize, when we get our staple food, Kenyan staple food is maize and cereals and the grains. When we get the food, the farmers are able to sell the food cheaply in the market, and then that ensures food security and lowers the cost of living. But what has happened is that we haven't even started harvesting the food that was planted late last year, you know, and the opposition is already in the streets. And I know for a fact, having talked with colleagues who are experts in food security, when Kenya starts harvesting the maize in the month of August, September this year, we're going to start seeing food prices coming down. Already, things like potatoes, some vegetables, tomatoes, the prices have already started coming down because of those subsidies in the agricultural sector. So like you've rightly put it, the government needed more time to settle down. They came and inherited a very huge debt. They are still trying to balance how to pay this external debt and pay their own internal obligations. So the government's plate was full. The current president came and found an economy riddled with debt, with a lot of issues, and he's been trying to solve them one by one. So the opposition parties, in my view, did not give the government time to settle down. And even then, whatever issues they need to raise, they have quite a strong parliamentary team they could have used to discuss these things robustly in Parliament to try and say, this is what we are suggesting, this is the way we want to look at it, and then Kenyans have this conversation. But what is happening in the streets right now is really not helping anyone. It's making things worse for the Kenyan economy. It's making things worse for even the protesters themselves, because nothing is getting accomplished by, you know, the violence that we are seeing in the streets.
Doctor, the way you are putting it, you know, things are escalating now. Protests have also been reported in Kenya's Kisumu, Kisii and Migori counties, in Kibera, stronghold of the opposition. The protests have turned violent, and even Kenya's Ministry of Education has announced that all primary and secondary schools in Nairobi and the coastal city of Mombasa are to close.
Yeah. In my view, Raila Odinga is just capitalizing on a hard situation to try and make things hard for the government. Even if he was the one in power, things would still be as thick or as bad as they are right now. So in my view, they have opted the route of economic sabotage, which for me does not really help the economy, does not help the country.
That was Dr. Edgar Githua, an international relations, security and diplomacy expert at the United States International University in Nairobi. President William Ruto defeated opposition leader Raila Odinga in last August's election, but Odinga rejected the results, saying they were manipulated. He has seen led protests against the government, and the focus of them has shifted to the financial issues. Ruto inherited a battered economy, grappling with soaring inflation, a high debt burden, unemployment, and post-COVID stagnation. The new finance bill imposes taxes that Ruto says will help create jobs and increase domestic revenue. But many Kenyans are unhappy about the country's cost of living crisis, and religious leaders have urged the president to repeal the law, warning that Kenyans face a level of hopelessness that can easily inspire insurrection. Ruto says protests will not be allowed, as he cannot accept anarchy. Shocked. Johannesburg residents are seeking answers after an explosion ripped open the city's busiest street, flipping cars and causing massive damage and injuries. Authorities say they are investigating the cause of the blast. Theories initially focused on underground gas pipes, but Egol Gas, the company responsible for the gas piping, has rejected that suggestion. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
It was just before 6 p.m. Wednesday when an explosion ripped open over half a kilometer of Johannesburg's busiest thoroughfare, Ebre Street. Several cars got stuck in the cracks created, while others flipped over, landing on their sides. When the dust settled, one person was dead, 48 others injured, and 37 vehicles damaged. One taxi driver told VOA that the blast was so forceful that one taxi that was in front of him was flung up into the air, destroying the roofs of nearby shops. Justin William, who lives next to the damaged road, described what he saw.
There was an explosion, and then when I looked back, because I was about to go into the building, and then all of a sudden I see cars flipping up and overturning. And everyone was screaming. It happened all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye.
Gauteng Provincial Premier Panyaza Lesufi told reporters that preliminary investigations indicates that systems, including those of network provider Telkom and some yet to be identified gas supplier, could have caused the blast.
There are three main holes that are an interest to their investigations. The explosion came through those three manholes. And the Department of Labor, they are of the view that there are certain institutions that they want to interview further.
Residents along Bree Street say they will not sleep peacefully until they are told what caused the blast. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
And in more news from South Africa, the government has described Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision not to attend the BRICS summit in Johannesburg next month as an important victory that will bolster South Africa's standing on the world stage. As a member of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration would have been obliged to arrest Putin for alleged war crimes if he had set foot on South African territory. Darren Taylor has more.
Senior government officials told VOA the Russian president actually agreed in June not to attend the meeting, but that the South African leader had to consult other BRICS partners, Brazil, China, and India, before going public. Pretoria University law professor Danny Bradlow says Ramaphosa deserves credit for using his diplomatic skills to avoid a situation that would have reflected very badly on South Africa. Moscow says Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will be at the summit instead of Putin.
This will be the first time since the BRICS started holding summits that one of the leaders of the countries has not come to a summit. So in that sense, it's a big step. Mr. Lavrov obviously is an influential government official, but he's not the president. So that lowers the standing of Russia in the negotiations. But on the other hand, I think
some analysts say Putin's decision to stay away from the summit could boost the African initiative to secure peace in Ukraine, of which Ramaphosa is a part. Bradlow is doubtful.
I would be surprised if the African initiative turns out to be the one that makes peace in the region, because I don't think Africa has a lot to bargain with. On the other hand, the BRICS do have a fair amount of credibility and persuasive power with the Russians, particularly because of the fact that China is in the BRICS and India, which is a close trading partner of Russia. Whether they will be seen as a neutral party by Ukraine and the Ukraine be willing to negotiate, of course, is a separate issue. Probably is less likely because Russia is part of the BRICS.
Russia supported the ruling African National Congress's struggle against apartheid with weapons and money. Ramaphosa's government has described Russia as a great friend and has refused to condemn the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. Since the conflict there started, Pretoria has forged closer ties with Moscow, declaring, for example, that it wants stronger military cooperation with Russia. The U.S. has also accused the Ramaphosa administration of supplying arms to Moscow, which Pretoria denies. The Kremlin said yesterday Putin will attend the summit via video chat, but the fact that Putin won't be at the BRICS meeting in Johannesburg has disappointed many in South Africa. Communist Party spokesperson Alex Mashilo criticized Ramaphosa for what he called bowing to pressure from the West and opposition parties.
Some of these parties are a transmission belt of Western imperialist agenda in our country. And the fact of the matter is, South Africa is still a racially divided country. Those who have their origins in Europe and who benefited from racial oppression of the majority have not abandoned their European worldview and the role that they played under the colonization of the Africans.
Mashilo says South Africa should now leave the ICC, which he described as hypocritical for wanting to arrest Putin while failing to indict Western leaders for alleged war crimes in Iraq. President Ramaphosa has never said he wants to arrest Putin. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Organizers of the Women Deliver Conference on Spaces, Solidarity and Solutions say about 6,000 people showed up in person, with tens of thousands attending online. Those attending the four-day meeting in Rwanda's capital are focused on advancing gender equality and reframing the question of who leads. Corporate lawyer turned entrepreneur Monica Musundo is CEO and founder of Java Foods, a Zambian-based food processing company, and one of the conference's presenters. Musundo talked with VOA's Carol Van Dam about the conference's objectives and what motivated her to start her own company.
We're really happy, first of all, that it's been held on the African continent and has been able to bring women from all over the world and also all spheres of influence. So you have NGOs, you have women in business, you have government officials all here discussing how we can further enhance women equality, issues related to women in business, how we can really enhance policy and things of that nature.
Tell us a little about Java Foods. And I know you were a corporate lawyer and now you're an entrepreneur. So how did that all come about?
Sure. So I'm a trained corporate lawyer. Had worked for 16 years all across the world, advising corporates on various things. And I'm originally from Zambia. And it really dawned on me towards the end of my career that I actually was not doing something in my own country. And I really asked myself the question whether I wanted to continue to impact my country through law or would it be something else? And when I visited, I realized that actually we needed probably a lot more support in manufacturing, in particular in food processing, where we found on shelf a lot of times a lot of imported products. And for me, what was front and center coming from Zambia was that Zambia grew food very well. Yields on a year-on-year basis were very strong, but we didn't process it. So we didn't put it in a packaged form for the consumer to buy. And there I saw an opportunity to really create products which were made from locally sourced raw materials, packaged very well at an affordable price point for a Zambian and a regional consumer. And that's where the business idea came from.
I think a lot of people can take hope from you, because I think that's the situation with a lot of countries in Africa where they have the raw materials and they have the food. They just don't have the manufacturing.
That's absolutely right. So it's not a unique issue for Zambia. And in fact, you'll see coming out of COVID and this crisis in Ukraine, that now we've been really highly impacted because imports were now becoming really more expensive. And the crisis was now becoming a food crisis very quickly. And therefore, the need and the discussion of governments to speak to business to say, how can we actually produce more local foods for our people, which are much more affordable? So sometimes in crisis, there's a silver lining in everything. And I think that conversations are now are picking up and are being much more inclusive. And that's why you see me as a CEO of Java Foods still being here, because of really strong focus towards more food production in our own countries.
Talk about being a woman CEO in your country. And did you face obstacles in getting your company off the ground?
So, yeah, I think I did. I mean, obviously, in an industry which is not used to seeing women running a business, coming up with a business idea, putting a team together and growing a business, manufacturing all across the continent is really dominated by multinationals or by men, simply put. So I was a bit unusual. And oftentimes people didn't take you seriously. So access to market was very difficult. A lot of people figured that I wouldn't be around. So why waste your time on me? I didn't really know what I was doing. And sometimes they were right. I mean, very early on, you were still feeling the ground and trying to figure out how to get product to market, how to price it. But I'm no different from a man who would start out the business, right? But definitely the critical aspects were that at the time, although I was a qualified lawyer with many, many years of experience, people weren't willing to bank on this new business in a new sector, in an area which they were used to seeing other people. So raising finance was very difficult for me. I had to use personal money to grow the business. And it took a few years. I actually think it took a lot longer than it should have to actually grow the business, because it was just that much harder.
What do you hope to do to help other women achieve the kinds of things that you have already been able to do?
So actually, I do a lot of things. And I think it's great platforms like this to speak to you about what I've done, but also going to conferences like We Deliver, but also being a part of what we call AFAWA, which is under the African Development Bank, which is a group of women entrepreneurs and ambassadors who are now speaking using our voice and their platform to tell women across the continent our journeys to come together to discuss innovative ideas. Because today, actually, we cannot say you shouldn't finance women-run businesses, because they have been actually successful.
That's Monica Musonda, CEO of Java Foods and the speaker at the 2023 Women Deliver Conference. She was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from Zambian capital Lusaka. In an open letter to Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat, president of the Liberal Party of Reform and Development, asked for guarantees that next spring's presidential election would be fair, free and transparent so potential candidates can decide whether to run. The 2018 elections witnessed the arrests of the former chief of staff and another ranking officer who dared to announce their intentions to compete against Sisi. Sadat explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi why he sent the open letter to the president, who plans to run for another term on behalf of Egyptian liberal parties.
Well, I mean, these guarantees have been a request from most of the political party in Egypt and also intellectuals to encourage those serious candidates to run. We all have been through a very difficult experience during the last presidential election in 2018. So we don't want to see this happening again. So we have been asking for constitutional and legal guarantees for all candidates. Means access to media, free movement for the candidates and their supporters, most of the government institutions to keep equal distance for all candidates. The election commission should be the one who will monitor all the spending, campaigning, and any illegal, I would say, movement from candidate to another. So these are the guarantees which will encourage those serious candidates to run. And also it will show to the public that it's a real free and fair election, whereby you can see a turnout for those to practice their rights and vote, as we have seen in other countries, you know. So it's all about encouraging either the candidates, serious one, or also the voters, that their voice and their voting will make a difference.
In your open letter to the president, you asked him, if he won the elections, to pledge not to amend the Egyptian constitution again to allow President Sisi to run for a fourth term. Why?
Simply because in the 2014 constitution, it was very clearly stipulated that the president will only have two terms. What happened in 2019, that there have been amendments in the constitution whereby they allow the current president to run for a third time and for a longer period, 6 years. So we want to stop this. Means that there is no any attempt to make any amendments in the constitution. This has to be a very clear commitment to the current president and any coming president that the constitution will not be touched and will not be amended for this specific term. So we want to have a clear commitment that he will not market this, or he will not encourage, and he will not accept if any of those beneficiary from the president, that they will ask for this, whether in the parliament or outside the parliament.
That was Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat, president of the Liberal Party of Reform and Development, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.